No, we are ready.
Okay. Call the meeting to order. This is a special commission meeting of the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Friday, January 28th, 2022. Ready for a roll call, Danielle?
Larry?
Here.
Ken?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Here.
Richard?
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
No.
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 Okay. Anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
All right. Anybody want to make a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to approve the agenda as written. Second then.
Motion and second to approve the agenda as written. Further comments? Hearing none. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Public comments? Any public comments you're aware of, Danielle?
No.
Okay. Brings us to the action item. Action item A, DEQ Tier 2 Corrective Action Report.
All right, the long-awaited report. So back in October 2021, we got DEQ completed a review of our facilities, and they triggered our Tier 2 corrective actions. So those four areas that we are going to go in Tier 2 is a boatyard, gear storage near Hallmark, gear storage, and Pacific Seafood Processing Plant. The deadline is Monday, January 31st. We've got to submit this report, and if DEQ approves it, we must have these things installed and implemented by September 30th, 2023. So Jack Aiken did talk to Aquarius. Aquarius put this report together for us, and we made sure it kind of follows our FEMA project with paving, storm drains, or water separators, water treatment areas that we have in the boatyard. So it all meets. Jack did review this before I put this out to the board, and Jack basically approved, and he likes it, matches our FEMA project. So it has to be certified by an engineer. So Aquarius would sign this once the board approves. Questions?
So if it has to be done by the 31st, are they going to be able to sign that?
Yep.
Okay.
If you approve today, we'll get them to sign it and submit it.
So this should then solve that stormwater runoff problem once
we hope so, yeah. If we continue having the issues, then we'll have to do another Tier 2 report and do more water treatment or something else. So.
But if that happens, it would seem to me it's going to be a lot easier to do that once you've got everything covered and drained.
Have the infrastructure for it.
Drain, and then you, if you had to treat it, it would be easier to treat it. With that.
Once you have the infrastructure there, it's easy to add extra treatment. But you got to have a process. You got to have storm drains. You got to have that in there. So if it requires more treatment, we'll add another vault, add better treatment that's inside the vault. Just depending on what we're failing in.
Well, right now, I mean, every time it rains and you've got trucks and forklifts and stuff running over that stuff, you're just continually probably pumping those contaminants to the surface that have been down there for 30 years. So once you stop that, I would think it would help significantly.
But every time we grade those roads, we get that tractor and we grade, we're just like going all back up again. Pavement hopefully is going to be our number one cure.
And they note that in the report too, that the TSS, our engineers believe that TSS, which is Tulsa, Minnesota, that's the dirty water, is creating, well, most of it is our TSS that we're failing, but that also transports the metals with it. So if you encapsulate, pave everything, you're going to reduce the TSS, which in theory should reduce the other chemicals too. So
ultimately, if we go back to minimal testing, what does that say?
I think we only have to test once a year. or no testing. I think we can, once we establish that we're having good tests, I don't think we have to test at all.
Honestly, I remember it was something in 5 years. It was maybe 4 tests in 5 years. It's substantially less.
Right.
Once you prove you've gone, period, I think it's a year of testing with passing rates. And then they slack off your frequency.
Yeah, because it'll be multiple testing to them, for them to see that average.
Yeah,
is
and we're
going to.
Yeah, and it's typically 4 tests throughout the year that have to all pass.
Yeah, we have to submit. Once we have passing, then we have to submit and get approval to have a waiver of testing.
Point is, if we do this project and it's successful, it's going to save money.
Yep.
Long term.
Yep.
A significant amount of money.
I have a question. This report is put together by Aquarius Environmental. And the person that's the principal engineer says it's to the Department of Environmental Quality Standards. Why do we have to have Jack reviewing this?
Well, Jack reviews to make sure it's going to match our FEMA project.
Okay.
That FEMA project is basically fixing our issues. So we want to make sure this report matches our FEMA project because we don't want to tell DEQ something that we're not going to do, because that would just throw everything off there.
Well, as I understand it, the FEMA project was designed in response to this beginning.
The mitigation part of it.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Other comments, questions?
Extensive report. It's there.
Okay. Make a motion.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve Aquarius Environmental 2 Corrective Action Report for submission to Oregon Department of Environmental Quality.
I second.
Do we have a motion and a second? Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard.
Yeah. So once again, we usually try and keep track of a few big things, and this is a big thing. Getting this done, and hopefully when the project's completed, that's one more item checked off our to-do list. Hopefully not 6 will come on in the meantime, but at least we'll get this one done. Okay. Information items, mortgage license agreement.
This marked up mortgage agreement came from our new lawyer. So this is their recommendation to strengthen our mortgage agreement. I figured this would be a good time just to show you what he's recommending, and what I was thinking about doing is having a workshop next week. So the lawyers are not available the week, you know, I was talking to Richard about February 8th, having a workshop for their lawyers, but they're not available that week. So they said that maybe the following week, but that following week is our regular meeting. So I'm kind of pushing up to February 3rd or 4th. I still haven't heard back from our lawyers, but they're today. So I figured we have our lawyers available and have a deeper discussion about this mortgage agreement. But at least to give you guys an idea of what our lawyers are thinking.
From just what I've scanned since I got here, a little more teeth in this. And that's what I would call them.
Well, those are the areas that he's recommending that we strengthen from his experience on at other ports, other mortgage agreements.
I think it's good that we add corporate people because a lot of these folks are corporations, and we're not set up for that, for legal
before. To hold a person risk.
Oh, we have a different group of citizens that said corporations are people, so.
Then I think one that's worth highlighting in there is number nine, the condition of vessel. About upon request from the port, that we can ask them to provide us with the current condition.
Okay.
That's added in there for us to be able to kind of require and have them do a little more if we want them to.
Where do we get it?
What?
The survey.
Survey, I'm letting surveyors. I have phone numbers and communications for them as surveyors. But, you know, in the event, well, let's just use the Miss Stacy, for example, where, you know, that if it's floating and it runs and drives, that's technically meeting our seaworthy, being able to cruise in our local waters. But if we feel like there's additional things, motors leaking, oil, you know, if the vessel's not quite up to the condition it needs to be in, or we feel that it is, we can ask the boat owners to provide us with one with, given we give the reasons why we're doing it.
I think that's good. It just strikes me as being a little subjective. So I'd like to explore a little further. Joe mentioned that at our last meeting that these people are required to have a survey for insurance purposes. That's a regularly scheduled, repeatable thing that I think that could be incorporated eventually into this. When you're surveyed for insurance, you have to provide the port with a copy of the survey that's certified. Whatever they're certifying, I'm assuming it's seaworthy, but I don't know. So that we can get farther down the line to have a regular routine process here so that everybody gets surveyed rather than.
The problem that I've found with it is that the different insurance companies are different in how lax or how frequent or the conditions of them doing. I was very surprised to see that the insurance company just reinstated the mistakes. They didn't look at it or anything. It was canceled and then they just reinstated. Very surprised that they did that. Just like our additional insured, we're supposed to be notified if they cancel. It doesn't always happen either. So I don't want to become too reliant on these guys giving us surveys on a certain amount of time because I don't think the standard's quite set out there, but to base it on an insurance requirement.
Well, ultimately, I think that we would be best served if we moved down the road to having some scheduled out of boat that says it's seaworthy and operable in order to state it. Because I think that's what, I think that's kind of what the state of Washington has done. And ultimately, that would help us, I think, get a little farther ahead of some of these things. And you know, we could set up, I'm not focused just on big boats, but on boats over a certain length or a certain tonnage. In our port, you're going to have to do something along the lines of making sure it's making us comfortable it's going to flow.
I think to keep it kind of, I guess, and not like you're putting us at pointing to see who does it. You know, we've limited to boats that we can't haul out. So that it just makes everybody, including all your nice boats, including Joe's boat, you know, everybody's boat that we can't haul out, you know, every X amount of years they provide us. How often do you have to survey your boat?
I think I survey it every 4 years.
Every 4 years. So I think we could come up with some sort of timeline that we would request them. The problem is that they all come in at different times. Mm-hmm. It's all over the place. So.
Well, we don't have to fix this today, but I mean, right. I'm just thinking down the road that it'd be nice if in our policies, in our merge agreement, we had some sort of a mechanism in there of saying, tell us whether your boat floats or not.
I agree with that.
But certainly for the time being, this is a good start to get us more the place where it needs to be and protect.
have some comments.
Go ahead.
I think it's great we have a marine attorney involved, and I like what he's done. But the thing that it still does not do is ensure that somebody doesn't abandon a boat on us. And I think there's some things that we might consider. Obviously, between the port staff and the attorney, you guys have to work some of this out, or this is just talking points to start with. But both recreational and commercial boats should be treated the same. I think we need to do a contract, just like we do with this building, with the boat owner. And it should have all of these, in addition to the, if that boat, you know, we get these boats and vessels, and they may be here 10 years, they may be here 12, 14 years. I don't know what's the longest, what would it be? Lloyd's boat?
Little Joe, it's been here probably over 40 years.
Yeah. So we have a perfectly good client, but now what happens if Lloyd dies and the family doesn't want the boat or whatever? The situation with Miss Stacy is a perfect example. Why should the port be in the position that we have to even concern ourselves with the removal of the vessel? And I think there's some things that we can consider. And number nine here points out that failure to abide by work ordinance and, you know, the licensees at risk, you know, they have to remove the vessel at their expense. But there's no guarantee. There's no teeth in that. If the guy just says, I'm not responsible. You know, that was my dad's boat or whatever the situation. So I think there's things that constitute an at-risk vessel, and whether it's recreational or commercial. And we should have the ability, when that boat or vessel is recognized as an at-risk, to demand a surety bond, or you could go a number of different ways. You know, basically, we want security of the value, whatever the value we believe that's going to cost the port to demolish that vessel. So whether it's $10,000 or $50,000, if it has to be taken to Coos Bay or whatever the situation. So they're going to have to post a surety bond, or they're going to have to put some sort of a lien on real property, a second. It can be a CD in with the port as a beneficiary as well, where we would only take the money that is due to the port. But that gives some teeth, and if all of that is written right into the contract, and we renew the contract for mooring, whether it's tied to the 4-year for the commercial vessels, tied to the 4-year marine inspection, recreational vehicles, if they fail to get Coast Guard safety inspection at no cost, they give that to us each year, or give it to you guys. There's little things, you know, when the vessel has not been used or moved in a year or 2 years, or it's deemed inoperable, no fishing permits, yet it's a commercial fishing vessel, no fishing gear. I mean, these are all signs that are saying, hey, this vehicle is at risk of being abandoned in this port. And I think there's things that we have attorneys that we're paying that can come up with a procedure. We cannot rely on the state marine board. The federal or the state legislator is not giving them the tools to work with. That's my thought.
Okay. I want to add on to what Ken's saying. I don't disagree with Ken saying that we should try to get some better agreement with these bigger boats. I'm not sure where you limit surety bond thing on what size boat. So it's only, I was thinking about the surety thing, it's just like another insurance, right, that you pay monthly or a year. But if someone's going to abandon the boat on us, they'll just stop paying the surety, they'll just stop that guarantee, I think. So I don't know what stops them from just saying, wait until that surety bond ends, because you don't have like a, I don't think it just goes on for 10 years, or I'm not sure how you make it.
A surety bond can be made for whatever you want it to be.
Right, I just don't know how you justify making it every single boat that's going to be, like, I think you're going to be 10 years, 20 years. I don't know how you manage that part of it. Then if they just wait until it ends and they abandon it on you, then you're in the same boat again. That was some of my thoughts of how you try to manage that surety bond.
Well, I mean, ultimately, the most practical way to do this would be to have them pay either the state marine board that goes into a fund that pays for the antenna. Maybe in the future, you know, I'm okay if we end up writing a unique piece of ordinance here. Nobody else in Oregon have. If it serves our purpose, I'm all right with that. But it's going to take some time and work, and maybe at a future workshop, we should try and schedule David Brock Smith to come in, or members of the COPA caucus, whoever come, and just sit down and talk with them and say, okay, here's the real world dilemma we're dealing with. And we're finding that our abilities to protect ourselves and the people that pay taxes in this district are limited, and we need some place help from them. Probably heard it before, but I wouldn't mind them hearing it from us also, that we need your help figuring out how to do this, because this isn't just us. So.
I was going to bring this up too as well. So day before yesterday, we had a conference meeting with Business Oregon about dredging, and that's dredging with small ports. So the small ports were involved with this meeting. Actually, they wanted to know what we were doing with our FEMA project, so we gave them a little presentation of what we're doing here. And towards the end of that meeting, the Garibaldi manager mentioned that they're working, multiple ports are going to get together and go to OPPA, which are a legislative part of SDAO, and they're looking at trying to copy or look at trying to copy the Washington's programs. And so there's movement going forward, and time-wise, they're looking at probably a 2023 legislative session. So I think the movement as ports is growing. It's not just like coming from us. So we have more ports. Charleston had a boat sink a couple weeks ago, and their harbor master was calling Travis trying to find out what our insurance is. Because now, so there's multiple ports getting really fired up about abandoned boats and sinking and whatnot. So I think the movement is actually starting to move forward. I don't disagree with you. We can get Brock Smith to
The reality is, we're getting ready for the 2023 session of the legislature. This stuff's got to be in the works by October of this year.
Yep.
In order to get it before the Legislative Council Bureau and get draft bills written and all that kind of stuff, you're going to have that done well into this year in order to be ready for January, February legislative session. Plus, you know, that would also give the coastal legislative members time to really kind of wrap their head around this and see where we're going.
Yeah, OPPA, it's good that OPPA is going to get involved with it and multiple ports, because it's not just one port making this big wave. It's going to be, I think this is a good movement. I think it's going to be a positive thing. Then it's just a matter of getting legislators.
Well, I think it's important that if that's going to happen, then that the legislature knows it's going to be in everybody's best interest if we write a uniform rule that that everybody has to follow as opposed to every court having its own rule. It's slightly different. Because that's going to be confusing to the boat owners, and they're also going to start shopping for the best deal, probably. So I think it's, you know, obviously a state bill, state law is a much better vehicle than anything else. All right. Further comments?
Joe, do you have any creative input on commercial boats and any ways that you could think of that could potentially help ports be more assured with the conditions of the vessels? I mean,
yes and no, but when you got the Coast Guard approving boats, I've stepped on boats before, and my boats are mint. I mean, wiring and everything. I've stepped on a boat before, and I looked at it with the Coast Guard guard there, and I go, "You approved this?" He goes, "Yeah." What the Coast Guard approves? He goes, "It doesn't matter if you have 20 electrical wires dangling in your bilge, as long as you've got your bilge pump hooked up to a switch and it works."
Or,
you know, and it's right, okay.
But it's safe. So one of the problems we're going to run into is the fact that the standard for boating is the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I've been very shocked too. The Desire was when the Coast Guard has gone on and they let that boat go time and time again. And it sunk.
The Coast Guard inspection is a safety inspection for safety gear. It does not cover a lot of other issues. I mean, they're concerned with sinking and crew safety. And our crew safety and, you know, basically sinking.
So is there anything other than the conditional survey that you have to get for insurance? Is there anybody else that ever comes and says, "What are you doing?"
OSHA doesn't come around? OSHA?
OSHA has no jurisdiction over documented vessels.
That's the main thing that I keep hearing, is that Oregon has zero regulation over commercial boats.
But, you know, Travis, if a boat owner does, if a commercial fishing vessel owner does not get the safety inspection every 2 years as required by law, then there's a big red flag. We got a problem with this vessel. When's the last time the Hiata was certified? I may have done the last inspection on that, but that was a long time ago. But, you know, there's vessels out there that we have, you know, if they haven't bought fuel in a year or 2 years, if they haven't done, kept up their inspections, if they've got behind in a payment, if they've gotten, you know, if you just look at the exterior, you can take a pretty good, you know, I mean, you know what a boat looks like when it's seaworthy. And if they've got clutter all over the deck, if they have no fishing gear, if they have no fishing permits, that's a high-risk boat. And I don't see why we would want to penalize somebody like Joe today, but next week might be a different week. But, you know, I like a surety bond. It's the person that owns the particular vessel that is a problem. It's not penalizing everybody else, you know, to pay for his boat. That's the one thing I like about it. And surety bond can be that guy, he's going to pay in advance. So if, and it's going to go for whatever time period we dictate. So if he stops paying, which he isn't, you know, it's part of the contract. We want to know what the expiration of the surety bond is. And you put those guys on a shorter contract. Right now, we can do month to month, which we can if somebody gets behind in a payment. But let's make it where it's a standard based on facts, not, you know, not just, I don't like this guy, you know, but here's all the red flags. do correct these flags, we don't require a surety bond or some other form of security to ensure that we're not going to get stuck with that vessel's demolition.
So how do we get out of court being that decider?
That what?
That deciding factor, the court staff being that deciding factor as to, at the condition, because I mean, when you pass a Coast Guard inspection and you pass a current condition survey, who are we left to say?
We have a marine surveyor, and if it comes down to, what's a marine surveyor inspection cost, Joe?
Between $15 and $20 a foot.
Okay, so if it comes down to, you know, pressing issues, we might want to pay the marine surveyor. Takes the burden off of you guys. If the boat is that deteriorated that we feel it is a major risk, then let's do something that supports our taxpayers, basically, and why, takes the burden off of you.
Why don't we just explore? I mean, another thing we could explore to do and not go through all of this is utilize what we can and terminate them. I mean, it's not a right to be here. It's not.
I'm sorry.
It's not a right to be here. I mean, it's
well,
so
pure and simple.
So both, you know, such as the Hyder. I mean, I don't want to say any more. I shouldn't say that. Any boats that have been sitting out there that haven't been moving in a year, haven't bought fuel, aren't active, you know, regardless that they're floating or steward condition, maybe we need to look at those aren't boats that we don't even want to entertain it. I mean, it's
but
just
Travis, that boat can occur any time here with a vessel that has been paying for the last 40 years or 10 years or whatever. When May came in, that boat was a perfectly good client. Situations economically have possibly changed for the owner. Change of ownership has changed. You know, you get one that they don't want to inherit, you know, from whatever. That's why I think you have to have a separate criteria that if this vessel is basically abandoned, like we have some sailboats in our port that haven't been to sea forever, they are no longer, they at one point in time have been lit aboard, they're not anymore. That's a high risk vessel as far as I'm concerned. And what I want to see is the port protected with real collateral. We should not have to go through obtaining an injunction after the fact that, oh, this is possibly coming up. Because after the fact, they may have already sold everything and taken it out of the port, except the hull. So that's, I'm just saying, we need to talk to our attorney. We need to put some teeth into our contract. And this contract has been improved dramatically. But still, there's no teeth when they, in that number 9 in the contract, yes, we can tell them, you need to take your vessel out of here. And they say no.
I think what I hear you saying, and I agree with it, is that we need some sort of a standard that are clearly written that says, this is what you will do. If you fail to do this, then we're going to ask you to leave. So that, you know, because I'm concerned about court making subjective judgments about a boat. Not that we
should. Concerned with what, Richard? I'm
about
sorry.
Us making subjective judgments, going down and saying, well, you know what, I don't like the looks of your boat.
No,
so
it
I want
has
you
to be.
To do this. So I would rather see a set of standards that says you have to make a landing, at least one landing a year, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this, as a condition of your moorage in our port. If you fail to do that, then we're going to take corrective action, or we're going to take action of some kind. Then we should say, and those actions might include surety bond, they might include a marine inspector at your expense, those kind of things. So that, and I realize it's going to be hard for you guys to keep track of all of that, but at the same time, I think you've got a pretty good idea who's doing what. I worry about boats like the Seawolf. Now, I don't know if you can pull the Seawolf, that big cataract.
On that note, the last thing I'm just going to say with it is the worst fear that I could see happening is you have an surety bond or we've made somebody over here because of the condition of the vessel, and right next to it, another boat sinks that's brand new.
Well,
then it just gives them, I feel, the opportunity to say, well, apparently my hunk of crap over here floats better than this new one. And here we are, even if they meet the criteria, imposing something on them that, because we see as a risk, when a boat we didn't see as a risk turns around to sink.
I think where we're headed here is trying to sort out the difference between acts of negligence and acts of neglect. Now, you can sink a boat by, making a mistake. You can sink a boat by having a marine through-hole fitting fail at some point. But when you let the thing deteriorate from the top to the waterline, that's a slightly different thing. So we can't protect against all casualties, I'm sure.
Right. And with that being said, I think if we, for these boats that are in, I think currently what we have in place, we can deal with those. It's a matter of, I personally am not going to be the one out there striking judgment. If we have boats that are of concern and we sit down here just like this and we say, well, let's look at this boat, then we can dig into that boat and collectively decide what's going to happen with it and what expectations we all want to see. And I think we all have that ability to do that in each individual case without implementing something throughout. The first one was taking the safety. We've been talking about that. I'm not going to give them a mortgage agreement, even though they have insurance, which is what we want. I'm not accepting anything in writing mortgage agreement for them until we get a current condition survey. And then I bring it back to you guys to look at the current condition survey, look at the pictures before, look at the corrections, and decide if it's something that we're going to still humor.
Well, take it a different way. So we have an engineer on staff or on contract. We have attorneys on contract. Maybe there's a point down the road where we want to think about having a marine surveyor on some sort of routine. The port can call up and say, okay, we've got one here that looks like a problem, but we want you to come through and let them be the final judge. They come in and say this boat isn't seaworthy, or we've got these kind of issues, and we've got that going for it.
Respect that point of view, but I think it goes back to the fact that the standard that a marine surveyor has, the Coast Guard inspections that they have, that's part of the problem, is that it's not up to par for especially what this group and our court is looking for to have out of these boats. Just because it floats and runs, to me, I think it needs to start being, we're heading towards, I don't want wires hanging down in your village. I don't want it leaking. I don't want open, there is things that to me that I've seen that marine surveyors are saying, nope, boat's fine. And when any of us look at it, it's not hitting that caliber of boat that we're looking for. So I think if we're looking to expand as a port more than what we already, than what's available, kind of like what Ken, and what you said, adding something that no other port has, well, what we're doing is we collectively as port management are going to take each boat as its own case and make the decision together, bring the owners in, and have an overall good conversation to see what's going to happen with them and move on from there. Because the current standards that are out there for both the more aren't up to what we're all looking for to have out here. Me and Gary looked through and we put over 20 boats on our list of
questionable
boats. But yet we'll meet and pass any Coast Guard standard, any survey, any insurance. They far surpass what any, they would come down and say, oh, these things are good.
The same with that?
Absolutely.
What's that?
Same. There's some boats out there that and then on top of that, even if they are okay, are they in the condition that we as a port want. I mean, it sounds like we want to set ourselves to a higher standard than what the standard is out there. And to be able to do that.
Want to protect ourselves.
Well, protecting our, I mean, then. Well, protecting yourself is getting rid of things before it happens.
Well, we're not going to resolve this today.
No.
So I don't want to cut off the discussion, but at the same time, I think hope will move on and look for a legislative solution as part of it and something else for us to be able to do satisfy our.
We also need to be fair to both sides.
Yeah, I get worried when you start talking about wiring and stuff. You know, if somebody crawled underneath my boat and looked up underneath the dash, they might say, huh, that's not okay. Oh, I've got my stuff all done a certain way, but whether it meets somebody else's standards or not, I don't know. I've been on some wreck boats that you look at this bird's nest of stuff and in the back where the battery is and go, I think that's pretty well done. So anyway.
No, the port definitely needs to be protected financially and safety wise. But slip payers also need to be treated fairly too, as long as we're following the guidelines.
Well, I think the same, or not the same, but the Miss Stacy is currently is more along the lines of where I think we're going to end up, which is okay. So, what's your intentions? What are you going to do? Give us your plan. Let us know what's happening here. Okay. Anything else?
I have one thing. Travis, write up a list. My suggestion would be write up a list of what you think are high risk, make a boat high risk. Because that is what we need to base, the facts that we need to base any decisions on.
Okay. Commissioner's comment. Sorry for what's on the agenda.
So next week, Thursday, Friday, I think Ken was going to check your calendar.
I do as soon as I get home and look at my calendar, which
your
day is.
Next week?
I think next week. Thursday and Friday.
Available by phone on that.
Yeah. I'm here, Mark. I know. My wife tells me otherwise, but I think I'll figure.
My calendar's pretty full.
Okay. Well, our next regular meeting will be Wednesday, February 16th, 2 o'clock. That we will adjourn.